know we weren't able to have church on Wednesday night, and we were scheduled to have our little send-off party for Brother Chris. That has not been canceled, it's just been postponed. We'll do that later on, but the weather, I don't know about where y'all live, but the weather got pretty rough at my house Wednesday night. It really did. What was you going to say, Brother Scott? I don't know. As much as we like to eat, it won't be long. Yeah. Actually, some things have kind of worked out where it looks like he's going to be hanging around with us for a few more weeks anyway. I guess we'll just have to put up with him a little longer. Yeah, he didn't call me and try to cancel it. I did that. Lord willing, we'll have that sometime in the very near future, or not too distant future anyway. Keep praying for Brother Chris, so as the Lord directs his life and shows him his will. 1 Samuel chapter 20, we stopped last time in verse number 18. We're still studying about how Jonathan and Saul are trying to come up with a plan to keep Saul from killing David. And this is something that's been going on for a while as far as Saul trying to kill David, and it's something that's going to continue to go on for a while. But David has come back to Jonathan, who had believed and hoped that all of that was a thing of the past because his father had swore that he would not kill David. But things changed due to this evil spirit that was troubling Saul, and him just being in such a terrible emotional, mental, and spiritual mess. So David comes back to Jonathan, tells him about it, and they try to come up with this plan, and they actually enter into another covenant with one another, one in addition to the one mentioned back in chapter 18. But Jonathan gets David to promise that he's going to show kindness to him while he's alive, going to make sure he's protected while he's alive, but then also show kindness to his family, his descendants, after he's gone. And so they make this covenant, and the plan that they've come up with here is when they have these meals, these feasts for the new moon, and Saul realizes that David's not there, that Jonathan's going to lie for David. That's the plan they come up with. And really, in most circumstances, I would say that coming up with a plan to lie is really not a good thing. You might want to try to figure a different way to handle that situation than tell a lie, because, for one, God hates lying. Amen? He just hates it. I mean, the Bible says that lying lips are an abomination to God. An abomination to God. Okay, so we're not talking about something that's, you know, just slightly offensive. We're talking about something that God hates here. So when you start concocting lies and telling lies, you're just heading in a terrible direction, in a direction that God doesn't want you to go. But this is what they come up with here. This idea that Jonathan is going to lie and say that David was summoned to go back to his hometown of Bethlehem and be there for a yearly sacrifice that his family had. That's the lie that he's supposed to tell. And based on Saul's response to that, Jonathan would know whether his daddy intended to do David harm or he was okay with him. And he's going to let David know what the result was at some point. And until then, David's hiding out. He's just kind of hiding out in a secret spot, waiting to find the result. But just to kind of set the context again, read verse 18 with me. Then Jonathan said to David, "Tomorrow is the new moon, and thou shalt be missed, because thy seat will be empty." Verse 19, "And when thou hast stayed 3 days," that is 3 days hiding out, "then thou shalt go down quickly and come to the place where thou didst hide thyself when the business was in hand, and shalt remain by the stone easel." Now, he's talking here about something recorded in the previous chapter. If you look back at chapter 19 and verse number 1, 1 Samuel 19, verse 1, it says, "And Saul spake to Jonathan his son and to all his servants that they should kill David. But Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted much in David, and Jonathan told David, saying, Saul, my father, seeketh to kill thee. Now therefore, I pray thee, take heed to thyself until the morning, and abide in a secret place, and hide thyself, and I will go out and stand beside my father in the field where thou art, and I will commune with my father of thee, and what I see, that I will tell thee." That's what he's talking about here in chapter 20 and verse 19. He says, when thou hast stayed 3 days, then thou shalt go down quickly and come to the place where thou didst hide thyself when the business was in hand, and shalt remain by the stone easel. He's talking about that previous occasion where he had hid out at this particular place. So he says, after you've stayed 3 days, then you go to that place. You go to that place that you were at before. And he says, verse 20, Jonathan's still talking, "And I will shoot 3 arrows on the side thereof, as though I shot at a mark." On the side of this stone is the idea, because he's to remain by the stone easel. And he says, "I will shoot 3 arrows on the side thereof, as though I shot at a mark," like he's, you know, target practicing, shooting at something. "And behold, I will send a lad, saying, Go, find out the arrows. If I expressly," the word expressly means exactly, is what that means. Precisely is another good way to describe that word. So, "If I expressly," precisely, "exactly say unto the lad, Behold, the arrows are on this side of thee, take them. Then come thou, for there is peace to thee and no hurt, as the Lord liveth." So he's saying, you need to pay attention to what I say. When I shoot these arrows, if I say to the lad, precisely say to him, "The arrows are on this side of thee," then you pick them up, you take the arrows, and you come out, everything's going to be all right. There's no problem. But, verse 22, "If I say thus unto the young man," notice, and this word is used all the way down from here on through really the end of the chapter, the word lad. It shows up time and time again. I marked it or circled it as it shows up. Lad, 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 lad. This is this little lad that is a servant to Jonathan. But notice how the Bible explains itself, which is one of the wonderful things about the Word of God. The best commentary on the Bible is the Bible itself. And you can, if you'll just pay attention to the scriptures before, the scriptures after, if you'll look at the verse where a word shows up, oftentimes, many, many, many times, the Bible will explain to you or define for you certain terms that are used. And this is a situation where I believe you see that taking place, because the word lad is used all the way down through here. And I don't know, but me, my mind, when I think of a lad, I think about some little old bitty thing, you know, this little kid running around, you know, a lad. And I guess maybe that could be part of it. But if you look at verse 22, notice Jonathan says, "But if I say thus unto the what? The young man." So a lad in the Bible is not necessarily some little bitty tiny kid running around. It could be, you know, a teenager, somebody that you would consider a young man. That's an illustration of the Bible giving explanation for what it means. "But if I say thus unto the young man, Behold, the arrows are beyond thee." If I don't say they're on this side of thee, if I say they're beyond thee, "Then go thy way, for the Lord hath sent thee away." This is Jonathan's way of letting David know the result or the response of his father. If the arrows are beside thee, pick them up, come out, everything's all right. If I say they're beyond thee, then that means things are not all right. And what you need to do is you need to get out of Dodge. You need to leave. Don't come back, because my dad still wants to kill you. Verse 23, "And as touching the matter which thou and I have spoken of, behold, the Lord be between thee and me forever. As touching the matter which thou," David, "and I," Jonathan, "have spoken of." What matter is he referring to? He's referring to that covenant they made with each other back up in verses 14 to 17. He says, you know, if you have to leave, if the arrows are beyond thee and you have to get out of Dodge and leave, make sure you don't forget what we talked about. Make sure you remember that covenant that we entered into, the promises that you made me, the promise that you would protect me while I'm alive and that you would show kindness to my family after I'm gone. Make sure that you don't forget that. Verse 24, so David hid himself in the field, and when the new moon was come, the king sat him down to eat meat. Just this week, Matthew was doing some of his schooling there at the house, and they were studying about the different phases of the moon and their science. The new moon, y'all know what that is, right? The new moon, what the moon looks like when it's the new moon. What is that? It's dark. It's the dark. The new moon is supposedly the darkest night of the month when it's the new moon. And so these, as we talked before, these people would have a celebration around this new moon. That was a time when they would have a feast that appears to last for about 3 days. But this is when the darkest night of the month would be. And it says, when the new moon was come, the king sat him down to eat meat, which shows you again that there was eating involved, which most all of these special occasions that the Jews observed, there was some type of food involved in it, which, as I mentioned before, is kind of how it is with us as Baptists. We're gonna find a reason to eat. Amen. We're gonna find a reason to eat. Just anything we can find. But in all seriousness, and don't misunderstand what I'm trying to say here, I'm not in any way insinuating that having dinner on the ground is spiritual, okay? That doesn't mean that we're a spiritual, godly, Bible-believing church because we eat. Most of the time, the amount we eat is far from godly, okay? We tend to gluttony when we have a meal at church. But my point is that you see in the Bible that a lot of these special occasions, these holy days, these things that God told the people to observe, he always had them bring food into the equation. They would have some type of feast as a part of the celebrating of whatever special occasion or day it was. And I certainly don't have any problem with the church doing that. As long as we do it in a manner that honors God, I'm all for it. Amen. I'm all for it. Because one, it's you know, obviously the food's good, but to me there's a lot more involved in it. It's the fellowship that we get to have with each other, which I think is very important for a church. I think for a church to be healthy, then its members need to fellowship with each other and have those times together. And that's a lot of it. The food is good, but it's like other things, and I don't know how y'all feel about it, but there's certain things that if you do it by yourself, it may be fun, but it's not as much fun. That's when you have other people to share that experience with, you know what I mean? It's like hunting and fishing and things that you do in the outdoors. I mean, I love to go hunting. I love to go fishing, but I like the camaraderie part of it too. That's one reason why I enjoy fishing the way that I do, because when I fish, the type of fishing that I do requires somebody to be with me. And I enjoy the fellowship that I have there as much as anything. Now, don't get me wrong. I love to catch fish. But I enjoy the fellowship. And I think the same is true, you know, when you have a meal is good. But to me, it's even better when you have brothers and sisters to share that with, you know, so you can fellowship together. And a lot of these things in the Bible, these special days and occasions, there was food involved. And this is one of those times, because they're having this celebration of the new moon, and they sit down to eat. It says, verse 25, the king sat upon his seat as at other times, even upon a seat by the wall. And Jonathan arose, and Abner sat by Saul's side. Looks like Jonathan was sitting by Saul, his father, but he gets up for whatever reason. And Abner comes and takes his place and sits by Saul's side. Now, who was Abner? Well, Abner's he's a fairly significant individual. Look back at chapter 14, 1 Samuel chapter 14. And this verse here is significant for a couple of reasons with regards to what we're going to look at in the chapter we're studying. One is because it reminds us of who Abner is, or who he was. 1 Samuel 14:15 says, "And the name of Saul's wife was Ahinoam." Now that's going to be significant for some verses we're going to look at later on in the chapter. 1 Samuel chapter 14, verse 50. "And the name of Saul's wife," did I tell y'all the wrong verse? What did I tell you? I'm sorry. Chapter 15 or verse 15? Verse 15? Okay. Well, I'm sorry. Y'all got it now, 1 Samuel 14, 15. Y'all pay attention out there, would you? 1 Samuel 14, 15, "And the name of Saul's wife was Ahinoam." I did it again? Okay. 50 is what I'm trying to say. I know what I'm doing. I'm testing y'all. I want to make sure that y'all pay attention. In verse 50, 5 with a 0, the name of Saul's wife was Ahinoam. And again, that's important for what we're going to look at later in the chapter, but the name of the captain of his host was Abner. Abner, the son of Ner, Saul's uncle. So who is Abner? He's the captain, notice, the captain of his host. That means he's his main military man is what that means. That's who Abner was. Now, obviously, you had other people that he had in positions, just like in any military. You have different levels of leadership. Well, it was the same there, because we saw how Saul put David over a certain group of people as well. But the way I understand it, Abner is, he's like the main fella, okay, over the entire host of Saul. So he's the main guy over his entire army. And he's sitting there by Saul's side. That's kind of interesting, isn't it, that Jonathan gets up and Abner sets down. You reckon maybe, and there's, you know, you have to be careful when you start saying things that the Bible doesn't specifically point out, but it's unusual to me that his son would get up and his military leader, his main most military man, would sit down beside him. Maybe they've already been concocting some kind of plan as to what's going to happen when David shows up, because David is supposed to be there, right? Remember how we talked about that? He's supposed to be there. Saul is expecting him to be there. And so he's got his main military man right there. And it looks to me like maybe they had already planned that when David shows up, Abner's going to get him. He's going to take him. That's just my thought. I don't know that that's the way it was, but that's my thought here. But it says in the end of verse 25, "And David's place was empty. Nevertheless, Saul spake not anything that day." He didn't say anything about David not being there. He didn't bring it up, didn't make an issue about it. "For he thought. He has his own thought process about why David isn't there. He makes an assumption, which is oftentimes what we do when we think. Many times we think, and we don't really know, we just make an assumption. We're thinking about it and assuming. We have these thoughts in our mind, and we think that we've got it all figured out. And the truth of the matter is, many times what we think is a long way from how it really is. And that's why you have to be careful about sharing your thoughts. It's one thing to have the thought in your mind and be wrong in what you're thinking, but as long as you keep your mouth shut, the only person that's wrong is you. The only person that's affected by that thought is you. But the very moment you open your mouth and you express your thought, then you have involved other people in that situation. And that can lead to some pretty rough situations. It really can. When you're convinced in your own mind of something, but it's not right, but you begin expressing those thoughts to others as if you know what you're talking about, as if you know that this is how it is, when you're really wrong, then you are creating what can turn into be a very, very bad and uncomfortable situation for a lot of other people. So until we know for a fact that what we're thinking about somebody or about a situation is accurate, what would be the best thing to do? Just keep our thoughts to ourselves, right? It'd be the best thing to do. There's been a whole lot of big problems caused by folks expressing their thoughts. I think so-and-so. And sometimes, this is how bad it gets. Sometimes when the person begins to express their thought, they don't even preface what they say by saying, this is just what I think. They just, let me tell you what's going on in that situation. That's how they do it. And they say, this is what that person's doing, and this is what they did, and all that. And all they're doing is telling you what really is what they thought in their mind. They have no evidence whatsoever to substantiate what they're saying. It's just they concocted it in their mind, they thought it, and they've now become convinced of it. And when they say it, they're not going to tell people, this is what I think. They're going to tell them as if it's a matter of fact. And when you do that, you just create bad situation. You really do. But here, Saul had a thought about why David wasn't there. He says, thinking to himself, something hath befallen him. He is not clean. Surely he is not clean. He's talking about him not being ceremonially clean. Not that he didn't take a bath or whatever, and get cleaned up for the festivities. These Jews, there were certain things that if they did that, or it happened to them, then by the law, they were considered ceremonially unclean. And they had to have a time. There was a time that had to elapse for them to be clean again, and certain steps that they had to follow for them to be clean. So what he thought is, okay, he's not here today because he's unclean. That's why he didn't show up. That's what he's thinking. Was that the truth? No, that wasn't the situation at all. But that's what he thought. That's what he thought. Sometimes your thoughts are not how it really is. I have done it before. Have y'all done that before? I'm just, confession is good for the soul. I've seen somebody doing something and just go to thinking, and, I bet you they, just come up with this whole big story, and become convinced of it in my mind. And I've had it, as a pastor. And I don't know about other pastors. Well, I do, too. I've had a lot of them share with me. But things happen when you're a pastor. Folks don't show up for church or, just different things like that. And you know what I do as a pastor? I'm serious. Every time one of you don't show up, you know what I do? I think about that. And I wonder where they were at today. Now, some folks in this congregation, I will say this, to be complimentary. Some people, when you're not going to be here, you always either let me or my wife know, and you tell us why you're not going to be here. And that may seem totally insignificant. It may not matter to you. That really matters to me as a pastor. It really does. because when you're a pastor, you have a congregation, and people aren't there that are normally there, or things like, you know, you have thoughts. Well, I wonder where they were at today. Did I make them mad? Did I offend them with something that I said in the message? Have I done something, some bonehead thing, and they're all upset? Well, you know, all through this stuff. And I have sat in my recliner in my living room and worked it up so that that person wasn't going to ever come back to church again. And all it was is her stomach got tore up and they had to leave. That's all it was. I mean, you know, just something that simple. But you concoct these thoughts in your mind. You come up with this whole big thing. And I've even done what I was just preaching against. I have verbalized it to my wife. I made them mad. They're not going to come back to church. I guarantee you they're not going to come back. I mean, just told her all about it. They'd be there the very next service, you know. Any of y'all ever done something like that before? I've done it. You just, what's that? No, she's lived with me long enough. She don't pay attention to half of what I say, brother. Which is probably a good thing. It really is probably a good thing. But you get paranoid about things when you've been doing it as long as I've been doing this a long time now. And some of y'all may be that way in your jobs and different things that you have going on, but you do have enough people that really do get mad with you and get offended and put out and leave that you just can't help but go in that direction in your thought process, you know, because most of us are more of a glass half empty than half full, you know, so our mind doesn't just naturally go towards something positive like, well, they were probably just sick or they were just out of town or whatever. Your mind goes in that negative direction of, you know, something completely opposite from how it really was. I've done it and verbalized it, but it's just, you know, you have to watch out about that stuff. You really, really do. Especially, it's bad enough, like I say, if you have it in your mind and it's not right, but when it really gets tricky and sticky is when you open your mouth and you start verbalizing, because then you bring other people into it. And if you're talking to somebody, expressing your thought, and they're the kind of person that you can confide in, and they're not going to say another word to anybody else, well, that can somewhat limit the damage. But there are some people, y'all know the kind of people I'm talking about, they just love to hear things, and as soon as they hear it, they're going to tell every human being that they can possibly get a hold of and just spread it around like wildfire. Y'all know what I mean? When you tell that kind of person, you have really opened up a can of worms, because there's some people that just live on that and just thrive in posting it and telling it, and it's going to get around everybody else, and it's going to make a real big mess. So let's all, myself included, let's be careful about sharing our thoughts that we're not sure of. Well, I shouldn't even say that, because we get sure of our thoughts that we don't know for a fact are right. Let's be careful about sharing those with other people, because that can cause a lot of trouble. It really can. Verse 27, it came to pass on the morrow, the next day, this would be the second day of this feast, which at this time happened to be the second day of the month, it says in verse 27, that David's place was empty. So it's 2 days in a row. And now Saul says unto Jonathan his son, wherefore cometh not the son of Jesse to meat, neither yesterday nor today? What's the problem here? He's curious now. Second day's rolled around and David's not there, so he wants to know, and he asked Jonathan. Well, Jonathan answered Saul, David earnestly asked leave of me to go to Bethlehem. Now, this is the lie they had decided that would be told, right? So Jonathan just goes right along with it. He says he'll lie. There's some things that you should never do, even for your dearest friend. And that's not always easy, because we all have people that we consider very dear friends that we love very much, and we wouldn't want to hurt them for anything in the world, right? But just like I've said here and in many other places, right is right and wrong is wrong. It doesn't matter who is involved. You know what I mean? And really and truly, I'm just telling you, I don't believe Jonathan should have lied for David. They should have come up with some other kind of plan. I don't know what that might have been, but they should have come up with another way of handling this situation than David putting Jonathan on the spot and asking him to lie on his behalf. David shouldn't have put Jonathan in that situation, which it appears to me Jonathan was more than willing to do it. But David is the one who told him to do this. We should try not to put our friends in uncomfortable situations like that. We should try not to make them feel like they have to do something for us that's not right. We shouldn't do that. And you see in this situation here, he just tells the lie that David told him to tell. And he said, he's continuing on, verse 29, he said, "Let me go, I pray thee, for our family hath a sacrifice in the city, and my brother, he hath commanded me to be there. And now if I have found favor in thine eyes, let me get away, I pray thee, and see my brethren. Therefore he cometh not unto the king's table." So he just tells everything just like David told him to. And the whole thing is a lie. And I know they're trying to protect David's life. I realize that. But just be careful about expecting things out of folks that are your friends. There seems to be this sense of entitlement that we have in our mind. And we think, well, they're my friend. I've helped them out. I've done all this stuff for them, so they ought to do this for me. Well, if it's wrong, they ought not do it for you. First of all, you shouldn't want them to do something that's wrong. And second of all, they ought to have enough courage to say, "Look, I love you, but I'm not doing that. You know, we're going to have to, I'll help you, but we're going to have to figure out a different way to do it, because I'm not going to do it that way." We are not to compromise what is right, y'all hear me, for anybody. That's father, mother, children, friends, whatever, okay? That's the way it has to be. But he tells the lie, and here's the response. And we're going to have to stop here for time, but here's the response. We'll just read it, and we'll talk more about it tonight. Then Saul's anger was kindled against Jonathan. He gets really mad with his own son. And he said unto him, "Thou son of the perverse, rebellious woman, do not I know that thou hast chosen the son of Jesse to thine own confusion and unto the confusion of thy mother's nakedness?" Now, like I say, we'll get into that in more detail tonight. Any questions about what we looked at today? All right, we'll take a break.